Edwin Washington Edwards, Louisiana's governor four times, 1971, 75, 83, and 91. He was elected governor of Louisiana. The man who, since Huey Long died in 1935, when Edwin Edwards was 8 years old, has dominated the political horizon in our state. If you'd like to reach us via email, jim@wrkf.org will work as well. Good morning, Governor Edwards.
Good morning, sir. Glad to see you.
You're looking great.
Feeling good. Thank you. I just celebrated my 84th birthday and happy to be in good health and very pleased with the generosity and compassion and kindness of the people of this state.
Are you surprised at the outpouring of affection?
Very much. For a politician to spend 8.5 years in federal prison and come out with the graciousness and the welcome that I got from the people is very surprising. And I want you to know I'm very, very grateful for it. It's something that has buoyed my spirits and made me feel good again.
So you're so popular now, and I think to a man, people are saying you're more popular now than before you went to prison. You'd get a lot of votes if you could run for governor. The election's 10 weeks away. If you had the opportunity, would you do it?
Yes. I'm kind of glad in a way that I can't, because I know I would be tempted to do so. And I really feel that if I did run, I would be able to get elected, and then I would face some horrible problems that will be left to the next governor by this present administration. They can be dealt with, but not on the way to Washington.
Not on the way to Washington. Is that what you view as the major issue here?
Well, the major issue is that inaction and inattention in the past 3 years have caused this state to go from a surplus posture to a huge $1.5 billion deficit, which someone will have to deal with, otherwise the state will collapse. And it's a very serious problem, and I think has been just postponed by the present administration in the hopes that he can get by in the next election and then attempt to deal with the problem, if in fact he attempts to, or at least to leave to his successor if he doesn't win the election.
Have you met Governor Jindal?
Never have.
I would imagine you followed his rise through the ranks. When you went to prison in 2002, he was preparing to run for governor in 2003 and lost to Kathleen Blanco, and then, of course, won a congressional race, served a little while in Congress, and then won in 2007. A lot of things happened while you were in Oakdale, including Katrina. I'm sure it was frustrating for you to be not only on the sidelines, but literally behind bars.
Very much. Mr. Jindal, Governor Jindal, seems to flit from one job to the other. It's kind of hard to keep up with him because he rarely ever stays fixed or put in any place, which of course is his privilege, and as long as the people support it, then that's what he will continue to do. Yes, I watched in horror from a prison television the debacle in New Orleans, and was horrified at the inability of local, state, and national government to get together and do things to keep those people from suffering and dying as they did for that long period of time. It was a great tragedy.
As it was unfolding, were you thinking I would handle it this way or that way? Were there things that were done or not done?
Oh, yes, and I'd have been accused of being a dictator, but I would have told President Bush to organize the army and nationalize the National Guard so that the expense of that situation would be on the federal government rather than on the state government. And then I would have immediately called the legislature into session and asked for emergency powers, almost like a dictator, because somebody had to take charge and get things done. I would have authorized everybody in South Louisiana who has a boat. And I wouldn't worry about whether he has a license or not, because, you know, they had hundreds mm-hmm. of people with boats there that they wouldn't allow to rescue people because they didn't have proof of insurance or proof of this or proof of that. To hell with that. People were dying and suffering, and you need to go and get them and do what you can for them and worry about the technicalities later. And then I would have told every bus driver north of Interstate 10 to fill up his bus with gasoline and come to New Orleans. Interstate 10 would have been a one-way traffic all the way, and I would have allowed those people to the boats to bring the people to the buses, take them and move them not to Houston or Atlanta or some distant place, but to gymnasiums and schools around the state, because every high school has a large gymnasium that can accommodate people, and every school has a kitchen that can prepare food for hundreds of people. And for a week or 10 days, whatever is necessary, I would have closed the schools and made those facilities available for those refugees until we could find something permanent for them to do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I would have made those orders and authorized people to expend the money. I'd have told the grocery stores to give them whatever was needed, and I would reimburse them after proper accounting, and I would have been called a dictator, but a lot of people who are not alive today would have been alive to read about how they were calling me a dictator.
Mm-hmm. So is it a failure in your judgment, Governor, of the governor who was in office at that time, the president, the mayor of New Orleans? Who bears the brunt of the responsibility for this?
It's a combination. I mean, they spent too much time arguing about who was in charge and who was going to do for things, certain things, and who was going to pay. You don't have, in an emergency like that, you take emergency action. You worry about the details after you rescue the people.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation. The guest is a special one, former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. You went to federal prison on October 21st, 2002. You were released on January 13th of this year. January 6th?
Okay. Well, on radio, we have to be accurate.
Well, yes, indeed. Thanks. I didn't want to. A week is a long time. But how many weeks are there in 99 months? A whole bunch. And you experienced detention, and a man who was accustomed to traveling anywhere you wanted, in any style you wished, and you spent 99 months in a federal prison. How did you keep your spirit?
How did I what?
How did you keep your spirit?
Well, I really got some benefit from going to prison. All of my life I've been very, very lucky. I came from a very stable family in the community and age that I grew up in. There were no drugs, very little alcohol, no racial rights, none of the problems that have haunted this country in recent years. And I ate with my family every night. My father and mother were home every night, and we lived on a farm and produced things for ourselves. I was born, and I don't take credit for it, I was born with a good mind. I could learn easily. I never had trouble in school at any level. Finished law school when I was 21 years old. And I often wondered as I grew up and became an adult how I would react if I ever had a serious malady hit me. How would I react if some tragedy hit me? And all of a sudden, this undeserved thing came on me, and it gave me an opportunity to see how I would handle it. And I can tell you that I didn't cry or whine or complain. I held my head up. I walked into prison. I vowed to walk out in spite of my age, and I did walk out. And while I was in prison, I spent a lot of time helping other inmates who couldn't read or write, had no family, and needed the assistance of someone with some contact and who had some ability to write letters, help with petitions, help them with their legal problems, all of which I did in an effort to be of service and value to my fellow prisoners.
Were you surprised that your biggest champion while you were in prison was David Treen?
Not really, because I knew Dave Treen, in spite of the fact that we were opponents in three elections. And I knew him to be the gentleman that he is. And when he came to my aid, it, of course, made me very happy and pleased, and it made me realize that forgiveness is a very important part of being a good human being. And he visited me several times while I was in prison. He spent a lot of time and effort and took some criticism for trying to help me. But it's the epitome of being a gentleman and a real Christian, if you want to know what the definition of a Christian is. You know, Christ said, you forgive people 70 times, seven times. He probably did that.
No doubt he came to your assistance. He tried valiantly to get the government to issue a pardon or a commutation of sentence. That did not come. Did it disappoint you that others were not as forceful as he was, people who you had helped for their careers?
Not really. You know, over 250,000 people signed a petition to get clemency for me. The statewide AFL-CIO convention unanimously adopted a resolution in support of it. Even some of the media and editorial writers took the position that the sentence was too harsh and I should be given some relief. So I was more than gratified with the public support that I had. During the time I was in prison, I got an average of 15 to 20 letters a day. That's 35,000 pieces of mail. And you'll never know how proud that made me feel and how grateful I am to the people who were so kind and so considerate and in many instances so forgiving, even people who thought that I was guilty of something and I should be in prison were nevertheless forgiving and thought that because of my age and my past service and the nature of the crime that the sentence was too harsh and I should be given some relief. It's just unbelievable that people would have reacted as favorably as they did given the circumstances.
Are you bitter at all?
Oh, no. That's one thing about me. I'm not bitter. I realize in my heart that it's one of the undeserved tragedies in my life, but I've had a lot of undeserved good luck, and it more than balances out.
If you encounter Judge Palazzolo, how will you react if you see him?
I wouldn't react at all. I would just ignore him.
Well, that is a reaction.
Well, you wouldn't. That's a negative reaction.
I know you usually shake everybody's hand, friend or foe. Would you shake his hand?
I'd shake his if he offered it, but I doubt if that'll happen.
The trial, was it, in your view, an unfair process?
Oh, of course. But I'm going to get into that in the second book that I write, and let me assure you, I'm not going to say anything that cannot be proved. I'm going to quote from the record, page and item and line, and people who want to can check it out. For instance, here's a tidbit. The chief FBI agent who handled my case testified under oath in the case that he had on several occasions lied in affidavits to federal judges to get permission to tap my phone and bug my office. That's his words. It's in the record. He said it under oath. Yet neither Judge Palazzolo nor the prosecution took any umbrage to that. I suppose because his lying was in an effort to get Edwin Edwards and therefore all's fair.
We will return with former Governor Edwin Edwards. As you can hear, a man still full of vim and vigor, and his spirit lives in all its glory, the spirit that allowed him to get elected 4 times in Louisiana.